life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Warning! If played at the wrong volume, the following podcast may turn you into a rampaging mutant. Welcome to episode 56 of Dynamite in the Brain with your hosts Brian Smith and Anthony Askew and special guest star Bradley C. Meek.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, guys. We are here to finally talk about The Skullman. But first, our regular features. First up, UK releases. And the first one is, out this week, is Bleach Series 9 Part 2. And I have to say, at this point, I am so disconnected from Bleach, I would have no idea what the contents of that particular volume would be.
And do you care what the contents of that volume will be?
No. I'm going to guess it would probably be some part of filler.
Probably. No, in Bleach, it's probably going to be...
Because that was the problem. It ran through volumes of the manga faster than any of those Shonen Jump shows for the first 60 episodes.
It was really good when it was doing that.
It was. It's not a sustainable policy. Then you start borrow storylines you used in Yu Yu Hakusho filler and recycle them as Bleach filler. I hope no one notices. Which they shouldn't do, because they should be adults and not watching cartoons at that point in time.
I'm not going to get this. I haven't got part 1 to 8, so I can skip this one, I think.
Then there's a complete series of Ergo Proxy, which I somehow gained a reputation on Twitter as being one of the few people who doesn't like it.
I thought a lot of people didn't like it. I thought that the overwhelming reaction to it was disappointment.
Yeah, I can't. I can barely remember it, but it wasn't anything which interested me from what I saw of it. And finally, something for Anthony, Spice and Wolf Season 2.
This is not something for me. Though I may finish Season 1, and I might be just hooked, and I might just have to get this, have no choice in the matter.
Is there any evidence that that's going to be the case?
Not at the moment. I've watched like 3 episodes of Season 1, and I don't even know where I put the DVD.
Well, you better find it before Amazon.
Why? Also, in case I want to sell it here,
yes.
Perhaps.
Right, yes, that's the state of play in the UK anime market this week. And next up is What You Watch.
What You Watch.
I know Bradley had got some things he wanted to tell us that he watched.
Oh, yes. I've watched a lot of anime kind of over the past week or so. A lot of good stuff. I finished up Azuma Dezaki's Dear Brother over the last week, which is this 39-episode series from the early, early 90s. I think it started airing in 89. And it was Dezaki's follow-up to what I think is widely considered his masterpiece and a masterpiece in anime in general, Rose of Versailles. And that, of course, was a massively popular success. So he follows this up with an adaptation of another manga from the same mangaka. But the story is drastically different than anything in Rose of Versailles, even though there are kind of story references to the French Revolution in it. This series is set in modern-day Japan. And it is about a very ritzy school that has an elite club of students in it known as the sorority. And at this all-girls school, the sorority kind of dominate everything else. They are the 1% among the 1% in the students, and they live a life of privilege that even the privileged students in the school envy. And every year the sorority goes through the freshmen and makes their picks on who they consider to be worthy to join the sorority. And there's a big hubbub about that. The thing about Dear Brother is that it takes things that to adults I think seem like really small things, like friends will promise each other that they're going to bake cakes together one day, but then one of them breaks that promise, and that causes some huge drama. And Dezaki has a certain style of directing and handling the very limited animation he has to work with that works really well with drama and makes already dramatic things seem even more super dramatic. So it comes to be something of a joke that in Dear Brother, if you don't follow up on your promise to bake a cake with someone, they might try and murder you for it. So it's a very, very, very melodramatic anime. And it actually deals with some really tough issues that even outside of anime, I don't see handled nearly as well, like bullying. There's sickness and there's death. And it's a miserable, miserable existence for these girls. And it's a really, really absorbing drama, surprisingly, because I think a lot of anime is kind of about celebrating the mundane. But in Dear Brother, it takes the mundane and makes it, like, really heightened drama. And it is really entertaining to watch and occasionally wrenching. There are some episodes that are a real kick in the gut. So it's really good stuff. I broadly recommend it, especially if you've enjoyed anything else that Dezaki has made. Then it's pretty much essential. This seems to be, I know Dezaki is a director who can swing back and forth between doing amazing stuff and doing rot. This is definitely in the amazing category. Have either of you seen this?
Vaguely. I don't think I saw it, but I was just double checking because I remembered. I think when I came across it, people were calling it Brother Dear Brother.
Yeah, it seems to go through a lot of names. Yeah, I heard it first as Brother Dear Brother, and then Vicky, who has the subs that I'm watching on their website, they just call it Dear Brother.
Yeah, because that's what threw me when I first started hearing about it again. I was like, is that the same thing as that thing or that other thing I didn't see? Oh, and it turned out no. So yeah, because you can tell Sign of the Times, if you go to its Anime News Network page, it has two news items. One from 1998, where it's called Brother Dear Brother, which is Fan Sub Update.
Well, I have that site. They used to do that. Oh, and the way that the fan subber distributed Brother Dear Brother was also really arcane. I think that they required people who wanted to watch it to write in and ask for a copy of the series, and then they'd mail it to you or something similar that just seems so, whoa, that's a really 90s thing to do.
That was how it was done, yeah. That was how it was done back in the day. I threw all them out, though. All my fan subs went in the bin, which were VHS. So is it I remember the thing I wanted to ask you. Is it just full-out melodrama? Is there any sort of levity in it at all?
It's more or less full-out melodrama.
Okay.
There is, I think, attempts at levity, but I don't think they work very well if they were intended to. It's definitely a series where you're going to simmer in one mood for a really long time while you watch it. And since I watch this in huge chunks of like 5 to 7 episodes apiece, I would come out of this feeling pretty bad, even though it's a really good series.
Oh, man, I can't even watch Jolly Shows that many episodes.
That's a lot. A marathon.
So anything else?
Yeah, two other series that I think are also really good and worth talking about. I think I'm becoming a Pretty Cure fan. I'm sorry, Anthony. I know magical girl shows are your favorite thing in the world. And I kind of felt the need to educate myself about Pretty Cure since it's a really big thing in Japan and has been for years. But it's just something that has completely passed me by, along with most other anime fans, I think. I watched the original series several weeks ago, and I really, really enjoyed that. I had a lot of nice things to say about it on my blog, especially the characters. And but halfway through, I decided I wanted to jump to another Pretty Cure and see what that was like. So I've been watching the currently airing Pretty Cure series, Smile Pretty Cure. If you don't know what what Pretty Cure is, its origins seem to be something like Toei executives getting around in a room and saying, we need to make Sailor Moon, but we can't call it Sailor Moon for whatever reason. So they make Pretty Cure, which pretty much operates on what's basically the same story as Sailor Moon in every iteration. But I think they do a better job with the magical girl structure that Sailor Moon revolutionized, you know, basically making magical girls tokusatsu heroes. And I found them to be a lot of fun to watch. The first Pretty Cure was directed by the same guy who did Dragon Ball Z and Air Master, and seems to really like animating close-up kung fu. So there's magical girls fighting giant monsters with kung fu, and it is a lot of fun to watch, in addition to having really good characters. But it's pretty generic. By the time I got to Smile Pretty Cure, which is what's airing right now, instead of just two Pretty Cures, they get five this time around. So it feels even more like Power Rangers. And it's also a much funnier series. It also focuses more heavily on comedy. So it develops the weekly villains that you get. There's a set of three of them. And it kind of gives them more quirks and personality than most other series that I've seen that are like this do. And I think that makes it a much more rewarding series to sit through. I'm at about episode 15 and enjoying it immensely, and I can see myself finishing this one, especially since it seems to be hinting that it's getting to some kind of a mid-series twist. I think that one of the villains is not really all he pretends to be. So it'll be interesting, because part of Smile Pretty Cure plays off of the convention of magical girl anime that seems to be a popular thing to do right now. And it's just a really fun series. It's very playful. It's very kid friendly. Pretty Cure is definitely a kid's franchise. This doesn't feel like something where it's supposedly for little girls, but you can kind of tell that it's also supposed to be for creepy old men, which makes me feel like a creepy old man when I enjoy, say, Nanaha. So, yeah, really good stuff. Are y'all familiar with Pretty Cure?
Yes. I've not watched it, but I don't intend to, I'm afraid.
No, I'm going to make you watch some of it at some point. It's one episode of something. I've seen a chunk of the first series and little bits of subsequent series. And it does, the first series, as we mentioned on the Ultimate Muscle episode, does air in the UK on the satellite channels.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Because we've got that. It's that Canadian dub, which went everywhere which speaks English but America.
Is there a fan base for it in the UK?
I'm trying to think. I think there was a fan base in the past, but I don't see so much it being talked about now in the UK. I'm trying to think what people are into, but I'm pretty sure there was costumes of it in the past, but less so now. The thing you want to move on to next?
Supernatural.
After you finish Pretty Cure, is you want to move on to Jewel Pet, if you want to see another place.
Where I saw the screen cap that you posted on Twitter. That looks fabulous.
And argue with Exodore about whether or not it was a magical girl show or not. The first two series are definitely magical girl shows. The last two they've done just sort of go off on an absolutely weird tangent. So the third one does away with the magical girl aspect entirely, and is set in a school with humans going to school with mascot animals and animal people, and then the latest one just takes the idea that magical girls are the Sentai teams, and instead does it and just has a Sentai team instead of magical girls hanging out with these jewel pets. So yeah, I think the idea was, well, one mascot animal is good, but what if we had an entire country full of mascot animals? It would be even better. We can sell even more merchandise. Yeah, so what's your third thing?
The anime adaptation of Supernatural. I had bought the DVDs a long time ago, and kind of like Skullman, they just kind of sat there without me finding the motivation to watch them. But once I finished Skullman, I was like, well, let's put this $40 or so that I put down for this to good use. I bought the series blind. I don't know anything about the live-action TV series here in America. I just bought this because it was getting good reviews, and I'm glad I did. It's a really, really good series. I'm only 3 episodes into it. I can't say much about it. Other than it seems to be the exception for anime adaptations to Western properties, which I think have a history of suckage.
Yeah, I'd be interested to check that out as well, because I like the series. The live action is pretty good.
So. Yeah, it kind of passed me by. I knew it was coming out, and then it was out. I missed that bit, and then...
It didn't seem to get any marketing beyond just a little bit of web ads. That was it.
Yeah.
It seems like for something like this, you would want... You know, you would want it to have a much bigger presence, a huge presence at, like, Comic-Con, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
should ask my boss whether his wife's got it, because she's a big Supernatural fan and dragged him to a Supernatural convention.
What I'm curious about is how fans who aren't necessarily anime fans but love the original TV series, how they react to Supernatural. Because the only reviews and reactions I've read are for people who, you know, love both. And they really liked it, but...
Yeah, so was it just a complete... Japanese production, because I can't see any sort of series scripting composition notes from English. Here's the original story, is Eric Kripke, who's the creator.
Some of the episodes I think are written by the staff of the TV show. I see a lot of American names pop up for original script by, and then it's adapted for Japan. I know that the series follows the original story arc of the first 2 seasons, but Supernatural is obviously a largely episodic series with, you know, one big overarching story.
Yeah.
So it's adopting the first big overarching story, but the episodic episodes are original to the anime.
Gotcha. Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I was just seeing whether Ben Edlund was. I know he comes on later on the series, but I don't think any of his stories have been the guy who created the Tick as a way to get into television and then stayed there. So Anthony, what do you watch?
Since I've been ill, I've been really rubbish, so I've just been watching more Comedy Central roasts.
Which one? Bob, seen this time?
Bob Saget one, and Flavor Flav, whatever he's called.
Yes,
you're the rapper guy. That's
correct. Yeah, I know the rapper guy.
what's his line?
That is correct. That is his catchphrase.
And it wasn't that good of a roast, because I didn't really know who he was other than that line, so I didn't have much context to apply to it, really. But yeah, that's all I've done, because I've been ill and working. So
did you like the Norm Macdonald bit on the Bob Saget roast?
Where it
takes the mickey out of the entire idea of roasting.
Yeah, it was all awesome.
The mildest jokes possible.
Because at first I wasn't sure what he was doing, and then I realised, obviously, he just mocks it. But yeah, this is good. I like the roasts. They need to do more. Certainly.
So. I think the next one they're doing is Roseanne Barr.
Is that the... What? From Roseanne?
Yes.
Roseanne, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I'll check that out. Mm. Depending on who's on. Nah, I'll watch it either way. Because I want more Snoop Dogg on. Because Snoop Dogg is a great roaster. He's so funny. But does he write his own stuff? That's what I want to know.
I would doubt it.
Yeah.
I would like to think he does.
I Well, I suspect he does. I think rhymes may be the only thing he writes.
Yeah.
Right, and my... reggae music now.
Oh, yes. Snoop Lion.
Snoop Lion.
Oh, God.
I'm looking forward to that. where's my watchy watch? Ah, yes, there's two watchy watches from me. On the anime front, I watched the first five episodes of Bimbo Gamigar. Which I enjoyed greatly. It's a very funny show. It's about a girl who has an inordinate amount of good fortune, and the god of misfortune who's sent to remove some of that fortune from her. Because it turns out that she's actually absorbing the fortune of other people from around her. So while she has incredibly good luck, everyone else around her has an incredibly bad luck. And they get into fights, and they kind of flip around between who's the good guy and who's the bad guy in any particular episode, which is a lot of fun. And I was thinking what I...
Didn't the staff from Gintama work on Bimbo Ga?
Yeah, okay. I think that's what they're doing on the... It's kind of what we did in our holidays, I think, until the next inevitable Gintama series starts up again. Because they even make a joke about how this show is only going to be one season long within the show. There's lots of those sort of meta jokes in there. There's a character who doesn't appear in it except in the background, and then at the end of each episode points out where she's appeared in the episode.
Jeez.
there's loads of parody stuff, and I was trying to think what I liked about the goddess character Momji. I was like, what I really like about the design, and it's that she's deliberately designed unsexily, which is a rarity. I mean, they give her sexy clothes in the opening, in the ending sequence, but because she's supposed to be this goddess of poverty, she's got really plain-looking clothes. She's missing a shoe. She's supposed to be incredibly unglamorous, and they like Ichigo, who's the rich girl who's got all the good fortune. At one point, summons all these beasts of fortune to fight Momji, and so Momji does her own summoning and raises all the undead, who then just wander off and watch television. She's such a god of misfortune, the misfortune actually affects herself. And there's other things. There's like a version of Cherry from Urusei Yatsura, except he's a really tall, black, bald guy. But he is pretty much Cherry. Apart from... and there's a Chihuahua god, who's this pretty boy who turns into a dog when you inflict enough bondage on him.
Crazy.
Looking at Tumblr, he seems to be a very favourite character of some of the fans of the show.
Oh, I probably need to see this now. Like, I knew I needed to see it already because it was the staff of Gintama doing a new comedy, but still.
Yeah. I was surprised how much I liked it. I always felt ashamed that I was able to sort of rush through five episodes of that, and yet I've got loads of episodes of Lupin the Third and more Penguin Drums sitting around left unwatched.
Oh, being an anime fan is suffering.
But hard work.
Gobble down trash like this. But, the other thing I watched was the first two episodes of the new season of Alphas, which was a reasonable amount of fun. That was a bit odd that they ended the last series with like a huge bomb being dropped story-wise, and then they kind of back-footed very quickly in the first episode of the second season. So I don't know whether there was producers changing or what. But it's another one of these sci-fi shows where you get one good character actor to carry the entire show on their shoulders. It's David Strathern this time. And he's got his beard back as well, which is much better. Because the annoying thing, he had a beard in the pilot of the series, and he looked, which made him look, it added to his character, and then he was clean-shaven for the rest of the show.
Is he the main character in it?
Yeah, he's kind of like Professor X. He's basically a version of the X-Men, but what if the X-Men was all that they had more realistic powers? And there was sort of psychological and medical explanations for them all. Though that kind of gets stretched pretty quickly. But yeah, it's the X-Men on a cable TV show budget.
I might look into that, because I like me.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's not on UK Netflix yet. Maybe another year, though, because I think there might be a two-year lag on the Sci-Fi Channel stuff they've got on there. But that's what you watch. So now it's on to the main event.
The main event, finally here.
Yeah. Three weeks
from the Megan video.
And that is The Schoolman, the 2007 TV anime by Takeshi Mori. Mori, that's probably more pronounced. better pronounced, I think. Who is the, you might know him from Otaku no Video. I think it's one of his big directorial projects, isn't it? Otherwise,
yeah, I thought everyone would know him from Ruin Explorers, but hey.
Oh, I know him from that as well. I like Ruin Explorers.
Really? I was just throwing that out there. He did do Gunsmith Cats. I really liked that OVA, so.
Yeah.
But otherwise, there's been a lot of story bollocks, hasn't it? Bollocks things. Yeah, so this came out from Bones. It came out the same time as Darker Than Black. And lots of people watched Darker Than Black, and nobody watched this. Got a bare bones release from, is it Sentai or Section 23 or whatever they call themselves?
Yes.
Yeah, that was the first time I'd got one of their DVDs. Occasionally you could notice where they obviously put so many episodes on one disc, you occasionally got a bit of artifacting on really dark scenes, I thought. And there's a few dodgy subtitles. And the worst thing was that advert for the Anime Network at the start of the disc.
Oh, see, I never seen that because
DLC
player will just skip.
It was skippable, thankfully. I think I skipped it the first time, and then second time on the second disc I actually saw it. I thought, what are they doing? I know they're strapped for cash, but surely you could just not spend any on this. It's so South Park nonsense you're trying to do. Does that really drive people to go to that website?
What site? Because I didn't see the ad, so...
It's the Anime Network site, so it's their streaming site, so you can watch new and old anime! Like, Azumanga Daioh! That was kind of, you just basically being shouted at while this sort of poorly drawn child in the style of South Park was just moved around the screen.
Shouting at you. I'll have to put that back on, especially. Sounds great.
It looks like it was made on a budget of $15 and thrown together in an hour. It's just,
And even then, that seems far too much money to be spent. So I saw this originally in 2007. So was this both the first time you saw?
Yes, at least it was for me. Yeah,
it's kind of sort of based on a manga by the king of Japanese superheroes, Shotaro Ishinomori, which was originally a sort of a dark take on Kamen Rider.
Hmm.
And then there was a 1998 one sort of collaborated with Kazuhiko Shimamoto, and that was the one which got released by Tokyo Pop. And that ran for 7 volumes, and then there was this TV anime in 2007, which does not, none of these have the same plot. They may share character names.
Hmm. I'm completely unfamiliar with Ishinomori's work. And I'm curious, because a lot of the Skullman seem to depend on some familiarity with the characters and other characters that Ishinomori created to enjoy it. So I was wondering, like, how much did you know about Kamen Rider and Skullman and Cyborg 009 before you saw this?
I'm trying to think. I know more now. When I first saw it, I think I knew all those characters existed. I knew their character designs. I don't know if I knew much more than that. I know the last episode, the big final, well, not the final, the penultimate epilogue and the reveal there, I did get that straight away. But I don't think I necessarily got all the foreshadowing, which is in the second half of the series.
Yeah.
Is that penultimate episode, if I think I know what you're talking about, so is the same character the Skull Man through every iteration of the manga and the story, basically?
Let me have a look at Wikipedia. The first time round, he's Tatsuo Kagura, which is the which is who a lot of the characters think is the Skullman in this series.
Okay, yeah, all right.
His name keeps getting brought up,
and that's a red herring. Okay,
yeah, a one of three.
Jeez,
there are a lot of red herrings in the first half of the show. Let's just say what we thought about it before we start spoiling it. You two can go first because I think I'm probably the biggest positive voice about it.
Well, I don't know. As we mentioned, this is the first time I've seen it, so I watched it this week. Excuse me, I'm very ill. And at first, I really didn't like it. I thought it was boring. There wasn't enough Skullman. Cause I was expecting a completely different show. It is like very, very different than what I was led to believe just by looking at images and stuff like that. And it's just, I found it so boring. I mean, how could you not find the beginning boring, Brian? And you love it.
I try to think. I like the characters. I like Hayato and Kiriko, who are the two main characters.
See, it took me a while to like those characters. Like, it took me about 6 episodes to, like, even care what they were doing. I think that was the problem. I couldn't get into the characters to begin with.
I really like the character design all the way through the show.
No, they look pretty good, but there was something about it. I just had no interest in what they were doing. I wanted Skullman. And I was wanting Skullman, not two reporters travelling around the city trying to snap pictures of Skullman.
Yeah, I suspect that might have been a common response, even because what isn't included on the DVDs is an episode 0, which was a live-action show called Skullman Prologue of Darkness.
Ooh, and does that kind of make a little bit more sense?
From what I've seen of it on YouTube, no. It's just kind of, look, we made a costume, let's have him fight some CGI mutants. But if you'd seen that, then you might have expected more action out of the box.
Mm-hmm. I expected more action out of the box.
You do get some action.
You do, a little bit.
But it's sort of not framed how you might necessarily expected it.
Well, I mean, the DVD cover alone... It should have a picture of a guy holding the camera, not a guy with blood over his hands, which is an epic cover.
Yeah, which is one of the last scenes in the entire series.
But no,
cover.
It is. I could sit and look at the cover all day. I really could. It looks great.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, so am I. I want a poster right now.
I think the other reason I wasn't bothered by that is around the time that I saw it, I'd been avidly reading, I can't remember the guy's name, Jess Nevin's old website where it was just like an A to Z of pulp characters, and he'd also got one about 1890s and early 20th century pulp type characters. So I'd been reading a lot about Fantomas and various imitations. And there's lots of, because it's obviously, it's got a lot of Phantom of the Opera in this
definitely
show,
yeah.
Which a lot of those pulp characters borrowed from as well. And in Fantomas, then the main character is also a journalist who's investigating the masked character, who is the title character, but not necessarily the main character.
Not at all. Not at all. And a question that I've had throughout the series, and I still don't know, how old is the main girl, Kiriko?
16.
Ah. Because at first...
So legal in some nations.
Yes.
That becomes relevant later.
But I just had no idea how old she was meant to be. And I didn't understand a lot of the... Not a case of not understand, but I didn't... Like, people knew other people. I was like, how does he know her? And, you know, it's very ambiguous at times. And you get a lot of names thrown at you. And I was like, no, who's that? Who's that? Especially with this Tatsuo Kagura guy, who obviously you assume is, spoilers, but you assume he is the Skullman. But he's not. But I don't know, I'm still up in the air about the whole thing. Like, it turned out to be a very different series to what I expected, in a good way. Because when I finally got to like the characters, when I finally kind of fell into the story, I really got into it. But it just took a little longer than I expected to do.
Bradley.
Yeah, I'm not quite as positive as Anthony, or I guess Brian either. I felt it was, the story was an indigestible lump, especially in the beginning of the series. I always like it in anime when they show and don't tell. But when you have a story with such a massive cast, and where there's at least three different conspiracies going on at the same time that the main character just keeps bumping up against the edges of, and that the series kind of references obliquely until in the last three episodes all hell is unpacked and breaks loose. I found the story really difficult to track. I have very strong complaints, especially about, I think, episodes 4 and 5, and how it's not clear what exactly goes on there and why we should care at all, and how that ties into the Skull Man himself, which is, it turns out, pretty obliquely. Usually when I watch an anime that has one narrative that's continued throughout, I feel like it takes too long for the story to finish. And I think that's just one of the limitations of having to work in 13 or 26 episodes, or just having to fit your story into one or more cores a year, you know? This is one of the few series where I feel like if they had 26 episodes to work with instead of 13, and had more time to develop the characters and the conspiracies that are going on, like what exactly is up with the cult, how the main character's adopted uncle fits into everything, what exactly his position in this city is, what happened in that war, why is this city a totalitarian society, did North Korea invade Japan and now controls parts of Japan. I don't really understand what's going on. Part of the reason that I asked you earlier about how familiar you were with the series is that I think that it assumes a certain level of familiarity with the characters that Ishinomori created, and it tries to play with those expectations a bit. But when you're an ignorant American like myself, that just all flew right by my head, and I had to do research later. Like, I'm only vaguely familiar with who Kamen Rider is, who Cyborg 00, what Cyborg 009 even is. Mm-hmm. And that turns out to be kind of a big deal later on in the second half of the series.
So from episode 8 onwards, it's definitely playing with you, with anyone who's got knowledge of Cyborg 009 is going to get a lot of stuff out of it.
It's basically a prequel to Cyborg 009 in the end, is what kind of the big reveal is. There were characters would do things, and I couldn't follow why they did them at all, even near the end of the series, when I felt the pacing and the story had finally come together and had become interesting. But even then, like, the main villain, I felt, was really underdeveloped. And he was more or less the grand monster of the week that time around, and I felt that was a bit of a shame. My main feeling is one of disappointment, because this is something that I thought I would really like. And it really has nothing to do with not seeing enough of the Skull Man. I was okay with the idea of a journalist coming in and investigating the Skull Man, and the Skull Man is only someone who you see in the peripheries. I think that's an interesting way to approach a superhero. But I feel like its reach just was much shorter than its grasp, or much longer than its grasp.
Well, I liked it a lot. I disagree that it's indigestible, because I think it goes out of its way to try and make itself more digestible. But I will say I didn't notice this the first time I saw it.
If this is like the second time, I'd imagine it's a bit easier to follow.
I noticed is that, like the Tokusatsu series, that it's obviously, I think emulating isn't the right word, but referencing, it breaks stories down to two episode arcs. So you've got the first episode, which is just them arriving and the first actress getting killed by a schoolman. Then you've got the two-episode arc about the replacement actress and her assistant. Then you've got the two-episode arc about Usami, the first fake schoolman. Then the two-episode arc about Jin, the second fake schoolman. Then you've got the arc about Nami, the one that the character who our hero and the cop are kind of both in love with, who turns out to also be a monster. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the Cirque's arc, where the sort of prototype of the Cyborg 009 team show up, who are all voiced by people who are in the 2001 Cyborg 009 anime. Oh. This is a point where, yeah, there's loads of second half, it's making, not only making references to Cyborg 009, it's making lots of references specifically to that 2001 anime, particularly in the casting. Which I haven't seen enough of to know. I'd like to see more of it to then go back and watch this again. Because when I first saw this, I thought, oh, I hope they're going to do a Cyborg 0091 along the same lines. And then this time around, it dawned on me that maybe they're just making a prequel to a show they didn't make. Because the writer and the director had nothing to do with that anime. But they cast a lot of the same people. In some cases, almost in the same role. And then the last arc, you've got the one where the final schoolman appears and the character Maya is used to turn most of the town into monsters. So I think it does go out of its way and almost sort of take on that tokusatsu Kamen Rider format. But the difference is, at least from what I've seen of Kamen Rider, is they're not, the hero isn't waiting for monsters to show up and then fight them. He's actually going out and hunting them down. Mm. There's a lot of people you see him kill early on in the series. You're almost like, why is he doing that? I know they're turning into monsters, but they don't appear to have actually done anything wrong apart from the fact they are monsters.
Well, I mean, they hint more or less really early on that those people are monsters when the guy that the Skull Man is hunting in the first episode knocks our journalist hero clear across the street and into the vending machine and breaks the vending machine.
Yeah.
So you know something's up.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, but the reason I like it, and specifically now I know a bit more about the various things it's referencing, and I've actually seen some Kamen Rider, not necessarily the classic Ishinomori one, but the current goofball Kamen Rider 4s, I appreciate it more, and it's kind of because it does a lot of the stuff I like in Western superhero comics, which is sort of playing with not necessarily continuity, but with the concepts of particular superheroes and toying around with them in a knowing way. But yeah, I can see how, particularly in the second half, it might leave you cold if you don't get the things that, like, Brain Gear have got. It's BG, so that's the same initials as the villains in Cyborg 009, Black Ghost. So they're obviously an early version, and they call themselves, I think in the subtitles, Black Phantom is what they refer to their secret society part of them being. And I mean, I didn't realise until I was looking, because when I heard the very last part, when the final character appears of their new leader, and I think that's Norio Wakamoto's voice. So then I looked up him, and then I saw that he'd played the same character in Cyborg 009 in the 2001 version.
Yeah, I've got some picture comparisons that I found.
Yeah, well, the things which I definitely agree with you is it's hard to get a finger on what the world is they're living in.
Yeah.
Because Japan appears to have been split into two. But you can travel between them if you've got the right papers. I was trying to time and place. I would guess it's late 70s. What do you think?
I really don't know, because obviously it's meant like this alternate world, but I'm sure they've got, like, different technology and stuff like that. And I don't know. I would like to say it's kind of...
I'm assuming a generic another time, another place. Yeah. Just not any specific time or place that's anything like our real world. But I didn't concern myself so much with that as I couldn't figure out, like, how the city had gotten to this point and why some of the important people were important in the first place.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the reason I because it's definitely post-World War II, because they mentioned Nazis.
Mm.
So that happened. And the Cirques are obviously their reference to Vietnam. They're obviously traumatized versions of this world's Vietnam veterans who've had their personalities wiped over with cyborg implants.
And I assumed that the Cirques weren't the only ones who had been traumatized by not Vietnam. I think there's references that the uncle had been in not Vietnam as well.
Yeah, and the priest has been there, and the two Lost Numbers characters who are the schoolman's mutant sidekicks. They've been out there as well. But yeah, then there's talk of a Eurasia Union, which actually predates real-world talk of a Eurasia Union. There is actually. That is something that Russia wants to do now, according to Wikipedia. When I looked it up, I was like, is that a thing? Is that a reference to Cyborg 009? And then the first thing I came up was, it's this plan in 2011 to create a Eurasia Union. Yeah, the things that made me think of the 70s apart from that is the cassettes they're using.
Oh, yeah, they do use tape cassettes.
Yeah, and the hi-fi system that Masaki's got at his house.
Mm-hmm.
And the portable TV that... written his name down here somewhere.
The cop. Is it the cop?
The detective, Simonji, has got when he's in hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was the other thing, because I want to check whether 2001 Cyborg 009 was set in modern day. Because then that would also be another suggestion that it's they're trying to make a prequel to that. Yeah. In the times would shake out that everyone would be the right age.
Hmm.
For that show. The other thing I really liked is, yeah, there's jokes, it's cartoony, the character design's great all the way through.
I really like the character designs as well. But sometimes I had a difficulty distinguishing who was who. I usually have a pretty good memory for keeping track of character designs, even in complicated shows like Legend of Galactic Heroes. But some of the character designs I felt weren't distinct enough from each other that... I sometimes had a difficulty following or remembering people.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I mean, I there's only two I can think of, and I think that was
two cops.
Choice. No, Jin and...
Oh, yes. The guy with the skull.
Hayato, yes, because...
Yeah.
Which would also then explain Kiriko's attraction, eventual attraction to Hayato, is that he kind of looks like the guy she was already in love with.
See, I thought that was her brother at first.
No, I don't think so.
I know it's not. I know that's not the case now, but at the time, that other guy, I forget his name, I thought it was her brother. Jin, I thought it was her brother.
The second red herring.
Yeah. It's just... Ugh.
I think she treated him as an older brother, but wasn't really her older brother.
See, the reason that I thought it was like the brother thing was because of her age. Because, as I say, I didn't know how old she was meant to be. And I thought she was a lot younger than what she is. But then again, at this time she looks a lot older. Obviously, at the end of the show, she's certainly...
Yeah, she's about 9 months older than...
Yeah.
When you last saw her.
So, wait, who was the father?
Hayato.
Right. Because in episode 10, when she's woken in the tent, she isn't wearing any clothes.
Oh, I don't remember that. That gave me a scar, and I couldn't...
Because how old is Hayato meant to be?
23.
Ooh.
There wasn't any romancing scene that I remember, though.
No, it was just like, well, it was when they were camping, and...
Right, but there's no, like, moment where they go, oh, but I... You know, typical cinematic stuff. She just wakes up with no Okay.
Life during wartime.
I guess. Suddenly happens and there's no building.
Yeah, because I think there's hints.
And you wake up the next morning with the consequences.
There's hints of a similar relationship between her and Jin, I think. Particularly when I think that she's describing her relationship to him, to Hayato, and says, he taught me other things, and that's when he sort of slips and cuts himself shaving as if to be surprised by other things. And then he does his amazing detective work as going, hey, I've got a scar. That guy had a scar. So did that guy. They're the same guy. the other thing which did confuse me is the amount of different words they've got for this turning people into monsters project.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember them. Is that there?
GRO.
Yeah.
Gargo Project. O-Parts, I think, was the other thing. And then... Lost Numbers gets thrown around as well.
Yeah. There's so much stuff for just 13 episodes. I completely agree with Bradley, it should have been 26.
I don't know. I don't know whether they could do the same sort of breakdown of arcs the way they
Perhaps
do.
Not.
I think you'd have got more Monsters of the Week.
That would have meant more fighting.
I've given the story more room to breathe, too. I don't know, because... Thinking back on it, like, the story makes a lot more sense to me now that I've sat down and gone through everything. It's just the process to get there.
Oh, yes,
I'm banging my head against a wall for parts of the series, and
Do you think you'd have been fine if you'd watched it once a week and had a week to digest each episode?
Yes.
Or the next?
You know, possibly.
Definitely.
I don't know, some episodes I may have had difficulty remembering what happens, so...
Yeah, because I'm not sure whether they did particularly good recaps or any recaps at all.
I don't think they did.
I don't think there is, no.
No. So do you think that Hayato was Tatsuya Kagura in the end?
Oh, I didn't think of that. Is that something they hint at?
Yeah, I didn't notice it the first time around, but they kind of... Because it's when they talk about... They assume that they killed the son, Tatsuo... When they but the daughter was Maya, who escaped with the mother, and then married Goro, and thus causing his son to. Because the only thing I couldn't work out was whether Masaki was his son from a previous wife or a bastard son. Because he tells him not to call himself, call him dad at work.
Harsh.
I thought that he did that just to maintain. Professionalism or something, or maybe that was just kind of an extension of how the uncle was kind of a flawed character, and that he was a really good businessman, but he was a very bad family man.
Yeah.
Like his wife is running a cult, and he's busy running his business, and doesn't seem to particularly mind that his wife is manipulating their daughter.
Well, that's because he wants to sell the same thing. Well, to begin with, he wants to use that same. Whatever technology it is, alien or supernatural.
Yeah. That's true. He just doesn't seem to raise any objections to it.
Until about episode 8, I think. Isn't it?
Yeah. But I really like that theory. I think that's true. That makes sense.
Mm.
Yeah, I think he's Kagura now, at least.
Yeah, because the timing, I think, makes sense. I'd have to go back and watch it into the time. Maybe 5 more years. But yeah, I like
that to explain why the uncle adopted him.
Yeah. Well, no, he had a dad as well, who they murdered because he was going to... But that might be somebody who originally adopted him after the fire.
No, the uncle would have been responsible for Kagura's murder, right? And maybe the uncle still felt some guilt?
Yeah, but...
So he adopted him from the orphanage?
Yeah, but there was a Mikogami... Because he's Hayato Mikogami, and they mentioned that they murdered Mikogami.
Oh,
because
okay.
He was going to see what's out.
I didn't realise that.
But whether that was somebody else, or... I don't know, it's very...
Another red herring.
Another red herring, yes, which maybe... the other thing which connects it to... Because obviously there's a lot of Christian imagery. And in the 2001 Cyborg 009... 009 is a Catholic orphanage. That's where he ends up. Whereas he didn't in any of the series.
So yeah, I was trying to find any interviews, and I couldn't find any, because it was curious as to whether they just decided they were going to make a prequel to a show they weren't involved in. It just tickles me for some reason.
I think it's a wonderful idea.
Mm. But yeah, I just feel like I need to rewatch this. Not right away. I need to stew a little bit first, I think, but...
What other things are... Oh, yeah, the cartoony spots I really liked. Like when they... the episode when the cop treats them to a meal and they get huge cartoon bellies from eating. So.
And then they just continue their conversation while bloated.
And then the disguises they wear in the same episode to break into the cult.
Which yes.
A pink afro wig.
And then it turns out the girl knows kung fu. I was quite happy about that.
Yes, that bit's pretty good.
And also because when Hayato dons the schoolman mask and attacks that cyborg, he does the same kung fu. Just punches straight through the center of the cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that she would. Or at least in the way that he would take the mickey out of her martial arts. And what other things I want to mention?
Excuse me.
Yeah, the thing which really threw me is the general showing up in the last two episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And his
nuclear
bomb. I know what that's about, but it does rely on Cyborg 009 knowledge.
So what is that about?
It's because Brain Gears, they're trying to control... they don't want him having nuclear weapons because they sell weapons to people.
Okay.
And so they don't want to have somebody... They want Japan to have nuclear weapons because that means they can't sell their own weapons between whatever two superpowers there are in this particular world.
Mm.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, because obviously and then that's their motivation for dealing with him. But yeah, that is kind of... I think it's only there to show the growth of Brain Gear at the end when they've signed a deal with the new mayor.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and also just to increase the amount of carnage.
Oh yes, and there's lots of carnage. God, what a crazy show.
It builds toward the ending poorly, but I think the ending itself is really good. I enjoyed that part.
Yeah. I would have felt cheated if the ending was crap.
Okay.
Cheated.
So, complete spoiler here, but why did the Skull Man kill the detective at the very end of the episode?
Because he knew too much?
Because the implication is that he's saying, oh, only these people know about really what happened, and you see the cop and the Catwoman... working in the detective agency, which is the same name as the detective agency in the original Skullman comic.
Mm. Oh, nice. That's the wolf lady thing.
Yeah, I think I thought she was a wolf, but then all the cyborgs called her a cat, so I assume she's supposed to be a cat lady.
Ah, right.
And then you see Kiriko with the young child who grew up to be Cyborg 009. Yeah. If you know Cyborg 009, you know that he's going to be...
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's...
So I think the implication is that he's going to go and hunt all those the other three down and kill them. Because he's become Skull, the leader of... what are they called again? Black Ghost from Cyborg 009.
That's brutal.
And then you get a scene of him being inducted as the new leader. And
yeah, that's good.
With Norio Wakamoto's voice. Who did the voice of the same character in Cyborg 009?
See, I really want to see Cyborg 009 now.
Yeah, same. We'll have a movie in the near future.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm directed by Kenji Komiyama, I think is his name.
Yeah.
The guy who directed Standalone Complex and Eden of the East. So hopefully it'll be really, really good. There's a neat Pepsi commercial for it right now.
Yeah, because I wasn't sure about it, and then I saw the latest trailer, and I was actually, it got me hyped for it.
My only worry is going to be that it's probably going to be a really political movie, and every other time that Kenji Kamiyama has tried to connect his anime to politics, I've always come out of that feeling either confused or really iffy about what I think it's saying.
Oh, there you go. Just be like going to see a Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah, it will.
Oh, the other thing about Brain Gear is also the real leaders of Black Ghost are three brains. So I think that's also another. Choosing that name as their fake name is also a nod to that.
I really didn't like the look of that guy, the Brain Gear bloke.
What his name is, I don't know. They called him Arcade Van Gout or something in the subtitles.
He just looks out of place.
Well, he shouldn't do, because his character design is pretty much taken from Cyborg 009.
Yeah, I really liked his character design. I liked his character in general. He's really menacing, but also just seems super competent.
Yeah, and he's another one where he's voiced by somebody who played pretty much the same character in Cyborg 009. He's called Alucard Van Burghetto on the
Vampire.
On the Anime News Network site. And the character who played in 009 is... Where are we? Here we go. Claude Von Bogut. Oh, sorry, Klaus Von Bogut. But yeah, the character design is pretty much the same. But I think, from what I haven't seen the episode, the description says he's controlling dinosaurs with sonic abilities, so...
Ooh. Oh, wow.
I guess...
And apparently he also appears in some Cyborg 009 video game as well.
So really, all this Skullman has done is made me want to see Cyborg 009.
Yeah, I have to agree.
It's a good thing, though. It's a good thing. Hopefully, maybe.
Well, it's getting older, Cyborg 009, to watch. Wasn't there only was it an Australian release? Had every episode or something? All the details.
Well, if that's true, then there has to be fan subs of the complete series out somewhere.
Yeah, I know for a while it was supposed to be coming out in the UK, because it was on Sony's schedule. This is many years ago, but it kept on getting bumped further and further back, and then it just disappeared. Along with the later seasons of Jackie Chan Adventures.
Yeah, I'm going to have to hunt this thing down.
I did like the old man, Sumanji, particularly because he did the Columbo gambit at one point, where he was about to leave and said one more thing.
So who was he?
He was a guy who'd been framed by the chief of police from that town, and so he basically come to get his revenge.
Oh, nice.
But he doesn't connect into any Ishinomori property?
Not that I know of, but...
Because he was such a distinctive character. He didn't seem to fit into the rest of the town, so I wondered if he was really original to just the Skull Man.
Yeah, because I'm not sure, because it's like a lot of those conspirators, their character designs made me think that maybe they were taken from some other series. Also, the kids' character designs were similar as well, the orphans.
Mm-hmm.
Orphans on a bus, right at the end, getting threatened by explosions. Where I've seen that before recently.
No.
The other thing I took away from it is this is what I wish Zetman had been like, in terms of not worrying about so much sticking to a set text.
I haven't seen any of that, so...
I wouldn't rush.
Okay. I have enough to watch. I guess I'll skip it.
Yeah, I can see... Yeah, I think we mentioned that show. I can see them cutting it into a better version, but the TV version...
Hopefully.
Not much to... Yeah, no, I can't find any... let me see if I can find anything on the Japanese page to describe. Tell me if that guy's from anything else.
The detective guy.
Yeah.
I've got to say hats off to this for keeping me guessing who Skullman actually was.
It goes out of its way a bit.
I just genuinely didn't know who it was. And
I think part of the reason they had so many red herrings is that if you want the journalist to be the Skullman at the end of the story, and you kind of want to keep it a secret, then that conclusion just seems so obvious in retrospect that confusing the audience is probably the only way you're going to be able to pull off the surprise. Which, I mean, by the time that they were nearing the end of the story, I realized where it was going, but still.
Yeah, I think once, second time round when I'm watching it, it's very obvious that the priest's Skullman.
Well, see, that's who I thought it was straight away, but...
Really?
Yeah, then I was just led off the track. Led off the track.
That was a surprise for me.
It was once I knew that it was doing, because I haven't seen it once, and knowing that it's doing a Phantom of the Opera type thing, the specific references to Phantom of the Opera it makes is a big tip off. But if you don't, first time round going through it, no, I had no idea, because I didn't know what it was doing at the first time I watched it.
That's another one of my complaints, is when they do reveal that it's the priest, it's kind of a mundane reveal.
It is.
The drama out of it, and...
Yeah.
He just seems to say, oh, well, let's just put on the mask and let's go do stuff. Wait, what? What? No. I actually rewinded the DVD a bit to check to make sure, and I thought I must have missed something earlier. It's like when Kiriko got late.
I think it was just assuming that you got it by point.
I guess. I wanted something like the end of episode 8 or something of Madoka Magica, where... like the screen explodes with drama because of the big twist. And I didn't get that.
Mm. Yeah, it doesn't have enough Skullman for my liking. I wanted more Skullman. I don't like when he uses guns either.
But that was the fake Skullman.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Fake Skullman used guns. Real Skullman is a real man, so he uses a cool blade that he has hidden in his suit.
Yes. Swords, pole arms, and that special knuckle duster he's got. I don't want to call him Sumanji. The guy's not Sumanji. There's no one called Sumanji in this show. Why have I put Sumanji in my notes?
That's the other detective guy.
Is it?
The one who transforms into...
Okay, yeah. Maybe I wrote that down at that point. Yes, Tachigi is the old guy. Yeah. Let me see if he's been anything else. Losing my mind.
I would love to cosplay Skullman.
Well, you haven't cosplayed your other one yet.
I know, but... it's such a cool design. I love it.
It is pretty good, yes.
That's why I wanted more.
Did anyone else feel that the series was also referencing Batman? Especially in the opening episode? I mean, opening... No, the opening...
The opening theme and stuff.
Right, with the bats and so on, and he puts together his belt buckle.
Yeah, you're right, he is from he's from the original, well, the character design is from the original, they're from the original Skullman, the old guy is.
Okay.
And how does the story differ in the original Skullman?
It differs a hell of a lot. Looking at Wikipedia, Skullman is a mutant, psychic mutant. He's got a shape-shifting sidekick, and he's being investigated by a detective agency with the help of a young man named Tatsuo Kagura, who turns out to be Skullman at the end. But I think the main thing they take from it is character names, designs, and... it's got Numanity is the idea of the mutants in this, which I think is obviously what the plan Masaki has got, or at least, and also his stepmother had, but then he takes control of, to create a new version of humanity at the end.
Now, wasn't the manga one of the earliest examples of an anti-hero?
I believe so, yeah. I believe that is what people reference. Yeah, 1970. Yeah, so I think it's kind of like the stuff DC Comics were doing in the 1980s. It's already been done.
With this.
Hugely influential, then.
Yeah. And then Devilman doing something similar a year later.
Mm. I'd love to give it a read, if I could find it.
You can get the 1998 one. From Tokyo Pop, so you can probably find second-hand copies of that. But they're quite expensive.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do without them.
They also did 009 as well, which are again quite expensive. Yeah.
So, what is the origin of the Skullman mask? What is?
Well, it was found in that village, wasn't it? Along with
an ancient artifact.
Yes.
Oh, right.
And then they were worshiping it. And then he had second thoughts and sent it to the priest. He put it on, and it took over his mind. And then presumably Hayato turns evil completely because he closes the mask, which you never see the other schoolman do, do you?
Oh, yes, when the... Yeah.
Because when he closes the mask, you get, like, that negative shot where the colours are reversed.
Yeah, that was...
And then you actually see him, the mask, switch colours for real as the sun comes up.
Mm-hmm.
That was a neat effect.
So, any more thoughts? I'm just going through my notes. Before we move on to my game.
I'm not sure that many people will like this show. You know that? I don't feel it's for everyone.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I don't know.
I want to love it.
Casual anime fans who I think would be interested in it because it's a violent action series are likely to be alienated by it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because it doesn't turn into that until the Cirque's arc, really, does it?
Yeah.
Last four episodes gives you all the violence. Yeah, but obviously Ishinomori fans are going to love it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those in Japan. Are superhero fans?
No.
People who likes American superhero comics, I think they might like it as well. Particularly because it's doing a lot of the similar things that those have been doing in the past 20 years or 30 years now, blimey. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess some people like it, but... So, obviously Darker Than Black was out at the same time, and that's just... Did everyone just watch that instead? Because I've never heard of this until...
Yeah, that was the impression I got at the time. It was two people were excited about Bane shows, and then two Bane shows came along at the same time, and people couldn't bring themselves to watch two Bane shows at the same time.
Darker Than Black also had a really cute girl in it, so...
Oh, that is that. Don't find Kiriko cute.
Oh, I think Kiriko is a fantastic character. I like her.
But yeah, she's not
just being a grump.
Cute, is she? She's kind of, she's the tomboy.
Yeah, type. Yeah, she's more tomboy than, I forget who the character in Darker Than Black is. Oh, well, that's a series I was disappointed by as well.
Yeah, I was disappointed by that at the time as well. But Jun Shibata did the character design on this and the animation direction. And I really liked their character design on this, and the other things they did were Decoida and Ninja Nonsense for UFO Table. And, of course, after Skullman, they've not done any character design since, which is really annoying. I always find that really odd, but people who've got really great, distinctive character design.
Drop in, drop out, they just, go into video games.
Yeah, just stop doing it entirely. Who's the guy? The guy did Nadesco's character design. Keiji Goto. He's one. For a while, you could look at a show and go, oh, that's Keiji Goto character design. And then you just stop doing any character designs. Very strange. Whether they just fall out of favour or... Because he's still directing stuff. It's just...
Mm.
And then you say, oh, it's directed by him. And then you go, why did you get somebody else to do the character designs? Who's worse than you? Very confusing. But yeah, I like Shibata. Yeah, I like Shibata. I'm pleased. This was the point at which I was pleased to see them get away from UFO Table. And then there's all the stuff they've done after that has generally been classier stuff than sort of thing UFO Table put out.
There's also kind of a Bones look. I'm not sure how to describe it. But the show kind of has a nice mix of that look with the original, what I assume was the look of the original manga.
Oh, it's not that much like the original manga. Let me see if I can find a picture of Skullman for you. It's, it's a lot different. The original Skullman, there's lots of elements of it in there, but it kind of looks more like, I can't remember, I think it's a character in Kamen Rider V3, Rider Man. I can only find a Pants and Works version of him, but which obviously won't really give you the character design. But, yeah, it's kind of more, he's sort of more like got a big white blob mask with two big red blob eyes.
Oh, I am seeing pictures now, yeah. It's less of a skull.
Yeah.
Or like a bee.
Yeah, it's instead. More like a variation on the Kamen Rider mask.
Yeah. Still looks pretty good.
Oh, yeah, there's a toy there of him. Oh, image is not one. Oh, there we go. Yeah, so, yeah, they've kept loads of elements of it, but, yeah, not sure really how close.
That's what funny,
the guy looks like.
How do you feel about the animation?
I liked it a lot. There's lots of nice poses, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of episodes where it looks cheaper than others, but it's a TV show, so
right.
Never really get too bothered about that. And there's some really nice stuff in the last two episodes when it goes all out with the action. Particularly there's one scene I remember from this morning, because I watched the last two episodes this morning, where the cops are running along a wall being gunned down by the army.
And there's lots of cops getting killed. Lots.
But yeah, I did like the animation a fair amount in this. Try to think about anything else I've got here. Yeah, we talked about.
I'm looking at some pictures from the live action. I really want to see the live action, actually.
Well, there's clips on YouTube if you want to watch.
What's it acting like in it?
There's not really any acting going on in the clips I saw. It was a guy in a schoolman costume fighting a CGI monster. The costume looks better than the CGI.
Yeah, the costume looks really good.
I say that would be my conclusion, is that if you like Ishinomori, or even just have a curiosity about it, particularly Cyborg 009, you definitely want to check it out. And it's really cheap. That's the other good plus about it. What was it, $5.99 on...
Which I feel like I got my money's worth, so... And I was disappointed by it, so...
Yeah, you can't be too disappointed when you spend that. I mean, I think I got it for £7 on eBay, so...
Bargain.
Exactly.
Worth it just to look at the cover.
It's time, then, for a game of... Cyborg, Mutant, or Android?
Yay!
Because Ishinomori's things have a lot of these in. And these aren't all Ishinomori things. In fact, I think it might be evenly split between Ishinomori and Marvel Comics. I'm going to give you a name of a character, each of you, and you can tell me whether it's a cyborg, a mutant, or an android.
Ooh.
Three rounds of this. As you're,
I don't know anything about Marvel Comics. I don't know anything about Ishinomori either. I'm going to fail this horribly.
Okay. Bradley, as you're our guest, you can go first. So, okay. Cyborg 009, are they a cyborg, mutant, or an android?
I'm going to go cyborg.
You're correct. 1 point to you. Anthony.
Yes.
Magneto. Is he a cyborg, mutant, or android?
Mutant.
Ah, you were thinking of Magneto from the X-Men, aren't you?
Oh, what?
I'm talking about the Magneto from X-Men issue 50, which was an android designed by the Machine Smith.
Oh, you. That's
1-0 to Bradley. Okay, Bradley, your second one. Android Cicada. Are they a cyborg, mutant, or android? A what?
A mutant.
No, he's an android. He's brave. Come on.
I thought it was a trick question.
I thought it was
the
as
one
well.
You just threw at Anthony.
He's an android created by Dr. Kamoji to protect his children from the evil organization Dark. Okay, so
it was a trick question.
Chance to draw here now, Anthony.
Yes.
Deathlok from Marvel Comics. Is he a cyborg, mutant, or android?
Cyborg.
I know you're mistaken again. You thought the wrong Deathlok.
Oh, come on!
This is the Deathlok from Marvel 2-in-1 number 53, which was a robot version based on the original Deathlok.
I would have been right, though.
created by Harlan Ryder for the Brand Corporation.
Oh, dear. Yes.
Excuse me, I'm having a space bar problem. Right. Last one, Bradley. Inazuma Man. Is he a cyborg, mutant, or android?
I guess I can't say he's a man. Okay.
Inazuman. Sorry, I added another ma in there. Inazuman.
I'm going to guess mutant.
You're correct. He's guy who turns into a mothman. Okay, last chance to do save yourself. Make it too hard here, Anthony.
Yes, I'm do this.
Okay, Forge.
Is that from X-Men?
Yes. Is he a cyborg, mutant, or android?
I don't know. I'm going to go with android because I think it's a trick.
It was a trick, but he's not an android. He's a cyborg mutant. Disastrous showing, Anthony. You lost two.
I know.
Okay.
Better man won.
Well, next time we play Cyborg Mutant Android, maybe you'll stand a better chance.
Oh, right. I feel like this contest was rigged just a wee bit.
I should have known Brian. I should have known he always throws out these these red herons.
I threw them all at random. Okay, that wraps this show up. Thank you very much for joining us, Bradley.
Yes.
And that ends Superhero Month.
Oh, yes, I forgot it was part four.
Only a week late.
We did well to be that.
I'm not sure whether there'll be an episode next week or not because of Amicon. But if not, join us in 2 weeks' time for our Amicon review.
Yes, yes. I feel like I've spent more time on mute this episode because I've been coughing all the way through. I've done well to use the mute button.
Anything you want to plug, Bradley?
I have a blog right now. It's thosedamncartoons.wordpress.com, and I've been updating it fairly recently, so you can read my thoughts on whatever cartoons I'm watching, and my thoughts on thinking about cartoons, and my thoughts on how others think about cartoons to an obsessive degree that's probably unhealthy.
Yes, you can argue with him about what's cute and what's not.
Mm-hmm, or whether you should use cute to describe anything at all.
Oh, they used to, the Minami Con in the UK used to describe itself as the cute con. That used to be its unique selling point, was it was going to show cute anime rather than things like Angel Cop or Madball.
That's why I hate Minami Con. I don't do cute. And I listened to Bradley and watched, what was it, Milky Homes?
Oh, that was a fabulous choice. How much did you love it?
I loved it enough to watch two episodes. So, and then just give
up. That's the thing about Milky Homes. It's the cute cartoon that is anti-cute, that goes out of its way to be as gross as possible, while fooling potential viewers who think it's a cute cartoon into watching it.
Mm-hmm. It was something about it that was kind of redeeming, but nah, not for me.
Those actresses came all the way to the UK to promote it as well.
Who did?
The actresses out of Milky Homes.
I saw a video of their promotion on Crunchyroll. I don't think the actresses have any idea how fucked up the cartoon they're doing is.
Yeah, it's a strange. It's run by that card company, isn't it? The ones who do Card Fight Vanguard.
They're the original creators.
Yeah.
But I think it's a different studio and creative team that adapted the anime.
Yeah, because that was why they were in the UK, is because they come over for Hyper Japan to sell Card Fight Vanguard cards.
Okay.
And so they decided for some reason, and also I imagine it was more for Japan's benefit than the UK's benefit, so they could say, we've been to the UK to get this cartoon. They bought blooming New Japan Pro Wrestling, which I was supposed to have watched a pay-per-view this morning, but it turned out they hadn't actually put it on nikonico.com. So you could only watch it on the Japanese site, and then you would refuse your credit card. So they got this big plan to make New Japan Pro Wrestling big all over the world. But that, again, that may only be being said for the Japanese market, and that don't actually have any plans to do that at all. Right, my plugs. I'll do mine first for a change. You can find this podcast at dynamiteinthebrain.com. You can find us on iTunes and Facebook. You can find my own personal blog at awesome-engine.com. And you can find me on Twitter at awesome_engine. Anthony.
Yes.
Have you died yet?
I honestly, I am literally on my last leg. I am... You can find me on Twitter.
Great radio.
I'm sorry. I've been well to mute this all the way through. So you should be thankful, listeners, that you haven't heard me die.
So the funeral will be Wednesday.
I'll have to rid me of all my disease first to make us approachable by the human race. I just hope I'm good for the con next weekend. I'll be upset if I'm not. But yes, I'm on Twitter. Ant Askew, AntAskew, and that's all you're getting. Oh, no, I'm going to start streaming soon. I'm going to stream...
Video games?
Yes. And I don't know what games yet. I want to join the world of streaming. So, everyone else does it, so I might as well. But yeah, hello. Yeah. I don't know what my account's going to be yet, but maybe next week I'll have a sword.
It seems like a nice way to extend the navel-gazing I love so much about Twitter into my video game habits. So I'm looking forward to trying that once I get a new computer.
Yes, when I get my new graphics card, I'll probably do it properly, but it won't be long.
I am so old that I just don't understand the appeal of watching other people play video games.
It depends on the game.
But, it's bad enough doing it in real life.
What? Playing the game yourself?
No, watching other people.
Oh, yeah. That's it.
That's a lot. We'll wrap this up before Anthony dies.
Yes.
Cheerio.
That's it for Superhero Month. Till next time.
Bye.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.